Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it's Candace
and Kayla, and we're directionally challenged.
Yep, we thought we would have it all figured out by the time we're in our 30s.
But surprise, we don't.
We don't. But I don't care because today's episode is so awesome and I'm so excited. I'm fangirling so much because when we were trying to figure out like, what do we want to talk about in the wintertime and these like cold months coming up? Like we've talked about holidays in the past, like what's like a wintry theme, you know? And then I was thinking about you. We've always talked about Canada, Kayla. And then I remembered like one of my favorite follows on Instagram is the internet sensation figure skater, Elaj Balde.
And I'm going to be honest, I didn't follow him and had no idea at that time who he was. And I am so grateful that you brought him into my life. Not only is he just incredibly talented and just changing the game for his sport, but he is an incredible human too. And just to be able to meet and sit down with him was truly sensational.
I'm so excited. I mean, the first time I saw Elaj's videos was because the wonderful Jennifer Garner posts them. And she's so great at posting art and artists that I wouldn't normally follow. Like, I don't follow ballet, but I love watching the videos that she posts about ballet. And then now I'm finding myself like watching ballet videos. I never follow any figure skaters, but Miss Jennifer Garner posted a video of Elaj. And then I was hooked. I just couldn't stop watching his videos. And if you follow him, you know why. If you don't follow him, I mean, he's skating to hip hop and the way that he moves and like his incredible like backflips and all the things, like, and it's just the passion. And if I talk too much now, it's just going to ruin the things that we start talking about in our interview. Oh my gosh, I'm freaking out. I'm shaking my hands. Kayla, I'm so glad that you now follow Elaj and that you're so excited to talk with him as well. This is just the best day ever. I'm so excited. Read his bio.
Today, we are sitting down with the wonderful Elage Balde. He is a Canadian skater of Russian and Guinean ancestry. The newfound stardom marks the first step in his ambitious quest to confront racial inequities in figure skating and to build an inclusive future for this sport. He is all that and so much more. So here is our wonderful interview with Elage Balde.
I feel like my cheeks are going to explode. I'm smiling so big. Elage Balde, thank you so much for being here. Of course, how I had to start my morning was visit your Instagram page, knowing that we're going to sit down with you. And I saw your very sweet tribute to your wife. And then I went into a whole deep dive over all your videos of the past and your skating videos, the ones that I've been falling in love with over the last year and a half. And I mean, it's the breaking it down on the ice. It's the dancing. It's this charged choreography set to hip hop and pop music. And one of my favorite things about not only watching your kick-ass backflips that you do on your own and over people, mm-hmm. which is a whole mm-hmm. other thing I'm excited to talk about, but it's the joy. I think that it's the joy that on your face, in your movements. And I have to know, what was the first video that you made that made you realize, oh, people are watching this and paying attention and this is something special?
Yeah, I think it was actually the first video that my wife and I, Michelle, the first one we recorded. I remember doing it and I remember feeling a bit awkward in the performance and not being used to performing for camera, because it's a completely different thing performing for a live audience versus camera. So I had to adjust in the ways that I connected to myself, to music, but also to the vehicle that I'll be communicating with, and which at that moment was camera. So it was a bit of a process, but I remember finishing that first day and being like, there's something here that allows me to have more freedom than I've ever had, I think, in my entire career. And that's when the seed was planted, and then we just watered it and it just kept growing. And it just became now, you know, being able to, again, live in the space where I can do what I want to do, how I want to do it, just allows me to have a sense of freedom that I'd never experienced before in terms of my skating career. So it's pretty special.
Talking about your skating career, we really want to take our listeners back to the beginning for those who haven't been there with you yet. Can you talk to us about your childhood, what it was like growing up? I know you were born in Moscow and then moved to Canada as a child, and you've spent your life on the rinks of Montreal. And I know you've also said that to society, you were a Black boy in figure skating, you felt like those didn't line up. For the longest time, you really struggled with your identity. Can you take us through that a little bit so our listeners can understand little Elage?
Yeah, little Elage. So my mom is Russian. My dad is from Africa. I was born in Russia. We immigrated to Canada when I was just, I was about 2 years old. And my mom, being a figure skater, back in Russia when she was younger, she was always very passionate about the sport. And around the age of six, you know, she introduced me to skating. And, you know, I remember the first few moments were really fun. I remember just mm-hmm. being on the ice and being with my mom and being comfortable really quickly and being able to do things right away. And the sport got serious very quickly. And that's when I started hating skating. I started hating going to the rink, because growing up with an African father, Russian mother, especially figure skating in Russia, it's such a big sport. It's like a religion there. And people practice figure skating not to do it for fun. They do it to be the best and world champion, Olympic champion. And that's kind of the only goal, especially because there's a lot of poverty in certain areas in Russia, and there's a lot of skaters that were able to get their families out of poverty through figure skating. And so there's this mentality where when you pick up skates and you're going to be a figure skater, it's to be Olympic champion. So that kind of conditioning and that kind of pressure, little Elage didn't enjoy at all. Mm-hmm. I remember like hiding my skates and telling my mom that I lost my skates because I didn't want to go to the rink, you know. And I remember putting them in the closet, and, you know, she would go through my stuff, find my skates, and then bring me to the rink. But I had something, my mom saw something special in me, even though I was on the ice and, you know, I didn't really enjoy the process of competing and doing all of that. She saw that there was something in me that people would eventually be able to connect with. And if I was able to sit in my truth and my authenticity, I would be able to connect with large amounts of people. I didn't understand that though, obviously, as a kid. All I wanted to do is go back home and play video games. So, but you know, so that's kind of where the journey started. But I did start to fall in love with the sport. More specifically, when I started landing jumps that kids my age weren't landing, and I started winning competitions, and I started doing things where I was like, okay, there is something here for me to work on. And I see that there's a potential for me to do something great. And I became obsessed with landing new jumps. And so the whole technical side of the sport just was fascinating to me. You know, landing your first double jump is something that honestly is really hard to describe, or your first triple jump or your first quad. Is just this sense of accomplishment that that just resonates in your entire body. So that's kind of when my love for skating started developing. And then, like you said, I spent most of my life in Montreal. I did go to Michigan for 4 years, trained with some of the top coaches in the world, and then came back to Montreal for the last 3 years of my competitive career. And it was a roller coaster, definitely, throughout these 20 some years of competing.
It sounds like your mother saw the talent in you at a very young age, but as you got older, you saw the talent within yourself. Was there a coach or any other mentor, another skater, that you watched that inspired you in those kind of years where you started taking charge of your skating career?
Yeah. Very early on, because my mom being Russian, I was very connected to the Russian figure skaters. I loved watching them jump, especially Alexei Yagudin, who was the most powerful jumper out there. And he was artistic and was able to make people feel things. And I remember being so inspired by that, especially on a technical level. You know, his jumps were just massive. And I remember being young and having a lot of power and, you know, having big jumps. And so I identified with that to a certain extent. But I will say, though, that in terms of me being who I truly wanted to be on the ice, I didn't have any representation for most of my career. It wasn't until I was maybe 16, 17, where I saw, his name was Maxime Billy Fortin, and he's a French-Canadian figure skater, Black French-Canadian figure skater. And it was the first time I saw a Black man skate live in front of me. And that just shook my whole world, because for the first time I saw something that was different. Like, he was popping on the ice. He was skating to hip hop music. He was performing in a way that was so raw, and there was so much energy behind it. And I'd never seen that before. And not only was he able to do that, but he was able to do all the difficult jumps. And I remember seeing that for the first time and being like, this is what I can be, and this is what I want to be. And from that point on, I decided that I was going to skate to music that I wanted to skate to, and I was going to start to develop myself as an artist and as a performer. But it took some time. It wasn't until, I was like 16 or 17.
It's so interesting, because as an adult, you always hear, you know, stay true to who you are, and it's great advice, but it's so much harder to do. It's just really difficult to do. And what was the first time you performed on the ice fully as yourself in front of people, fully as the dressing the way you wanted to the music you wanted to? What was that experience like? How did it feel afterwards?
Yeah, it's liberating, to be honest. Mm-hmm. It's liberating, because for the first time you feel like, you know, you don't have to hide or be different or fit a mold or conform to rules. You can just do what you want. And, you know, and for me, I want to say that it wasn't as much of one specific moment, but more of a consistent progress to get to that place. I started in the competitive world, where I started picking the music that I wanted to pick. And again, what I wanted to wear on the S, because there was a period of time where I did everything to fit the mold. I changed the way, the kind of music I skated to and the kind of music I listened to, even outside of skating, what I wore on the ice, but then what I wore outside of the ice, you know, all of these things I did to fit a mold of figure skating, which was a very, you know, white European, rich elitist kind of environment, which I none of these things were me. So I tried to fit that and it never felt right. So, you know, breaking out of that mold takes some time and it was a slow process, but, I want to say that throughout my competitive career, there's a few key moments, especially towards the end of my career where, you know, I was able to do what I want to do within those rules, you know, within those boundaries. I didn't find full freedom as a competitor because there's still things you have to do if you want to perform and get the scores that you feel like you deserve. But then moving to then my professional career, which is touring and doing shows around the world, you know, there's a lot, there's no rules really as to what you have to do, but you're still performing for a production company. So even though I did find a little bit more freedom when I was doing shows and became pro, there were still things I had to do, you know, for the production company. So I want to say that the moment where I felt the most freedom was when I started making videos on social media. And that moment, it's a very specific moment, but that moment that I was skating for the first time on the lake Minnewanka, first time I skated outdoors in the mountains on a frozen lake, skating to what I wanted to skate to, wearing a Bulls jacket, and moving the way that I wanted to move, that's probably the epitome of freedom when it comes to being a figure skater, because I was able to do what I wanted to do in a space that was created by nature. There's nothing better than that.
I was going to ask if you grew up skating on natural ice or natural frozen bodies of water. I'm from Florida, so forgive me if I'm not addressing a frozen lake.
We call it wild ice.
Yeah. But if you grew up skating in that environment, or if that's incredible that was your first time on that video.
Yeah, you know, as a figure skater, you train indoors all day, 3-4 hours a day, you're on the ice. So the last thing you want to do is go find another piece of ice somewhere outside when it's minus 30 and you're just done with it for the day. So I would go home and rest. You know, I never wanted to skate outside. So yeah, that was my, and yes, I've skated outside in terms of like, you know, maybe there's a Canadian hockey rink and we go out, right, and play some hockey, you know, things like that. Yeah. But skating in nature where the ice was formed and created by Mother Nature, that was my first time.
It's funny. My husband's Canadian and I've skated on natural ice before in Canada, and it is terrifying the first time you do it. I remember looking down and the water was so clear. You can see the fish swimming deep down and the reeds blow. And I just thought, oh my gosh, it's going to crack. And then my husband's laughing and he points and there's a full on massive truck on the ice next to me. He's like, if it can hold the truck, it can hold you. But there really is something almost liberating about being in that environment and feeling that and being able to almost see the fish swimming underneath you. And you really are immersed in nature in so
many
levels.
You're connected to nature in a way that there's no other way to feel disconnected if you're practicing skating, or, you know, because you're doing this thing, at least for me, I'm doing this thing that I love. And I'm able to do it completely connected to nature. And there's a terrifying feeling with it too. Like you said, it's like you can see the bottom of the lake and, you know, sometimes the ice is 2-3 inches thick, but that is enough to hold your weight. But you can hear all those sounds, the cracking. Sometimes, you know, the ice shifts so you can feel like, boom, and you can feel it just kind of drop a little bit. But all of those things are normal and it's just a natural thing that happens. And it's just everything together, it just makes it a magical experience.
I want to go back to kind of what you were speaking on as far as sticking to a mold. Why is it such a rigid mold, especially on the road to the Olympics, in many sports? But let's just focus on ice skating, of course, or just skating, figure skating, of course. Why is there the certain kind of music and the certain outfits and certain moves that are just not accepted in reading up on you and in your career, I also learned a lot about skaters that I'd never heard of. Mabel Fairbanks, Surya Bonaly, who was the queen of the backflips. And as a Black woman mm-hmm. who was, you know, shamed by the judges, people would applaud and give her standing ovations, but she was then shamed in her scores. And so I don't understand how her performing an incredible backflip, and then you have, you know, women doing triple axels, and then that's celebrated. I just don't understand why it's so rigid and there isn't freedom to explore the what's next in a sport like figure skating, yeah. the art of it.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, we have to take the conversation back to when Black people weren't allowed to join skating clubs, you know, and that wasn't that long ago, you know, maybe 70, 80 years ago. It wasn't a thing. If you were a Black skater, Mabel Fairbanks was the first Black skater to join a skating club. And that wasn't until years into her practicing skating outdoors after hours when no one is on the ice, because she wasn't allowed to be on the ice with everyone else. And then to a certain extent, you know, until a certain time, Black skaters weren't allowed to compete nationally. So just that alone, you know, creates a space where the sport has been molded for a certain type of person and a certain type of style of skating. And when that is so, when it's solidified into the culture of the sport, anything that's going to come that's not that will be viewed as different, or will be viewed as something that isn't accepted because it's not what figure skating's culture accepts or is. And that is a process that's been going on for decades. So even if someone like Surya Bonaly or, you know, Debbie Thomas or Rory Flack or Atoy Wilson, you know, comes, and those are all Black skaters that were incredible. And, you know, they would come and, you know, they would have a different way of moving on the ice. And just that alone, because it hasn't been seen before, it's already perceived as something that's different. And when it's different in figure skating, it's not accepted. And so there's a lack of education now at this point in 2021. I think there's a lack of education as to what it looks like for different bodies and different people communicating to an audience or to judges in a way that is authentic to them. There's a lack of education for skaters, for example, who want to skate to hip hop music and move in a way that's very hip hop. The judges and the skating world and the culture isn't educated to understand the difficulties and the nuances of what that looks like and what good hip hop looks like. So when it comes to judging and scores, you know, there's no way if someone is doing a certain style of skating that is different from what's traditionally seen, this is not good enough. This is not what skating is. And if you take hip hop, for example, there's a lot of, you know, grounding, stationary movements, whereas figure skating rewards movement that just flows across the ice constantly. And if that's what's being rewarded, then something that comes and that is more grounded and heavy and has a different type of posture, well, that doesn't match what skating is used to seeing and what is being rewarded in the sport. And so I think that it's going to take a while for skating to start shifting its culture and its perspective on what does quality of movement really look like now in 2021. And it's not just being graceful and having nice lines. It's also being able to be to emote in a way that's raw and that's different. And I think that's going to take a while. It's going to take a minute to get there. I am seeing certain shifts happening, especially in specific skaters right now in the world. But I think for the culture of figure skating to catch up, it's going to take some time.
Hey, guys, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in just a minute. Directionally challenged.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's time to get more in 2024. I know for me, one of my goals is to feel really strong this year. And honestly, so far, so good. Because that's where 310 Nutrition comes in. It's helping me and our listeners in the new year with protein and super rich food products with so many options and flavors. Right now I have the Chocolate Bliss and Caramel Sundae, and they are both so delicious. I have to hide them from my husband so that he doesn't steal them too. They're a triplex protein blend, plant-based proteins that include pea, brown rice, and pumpkin that leave me feeling full. 310 Nutrition also has a hydrate electrolyte drink mix. My favorite is the peach mango flavor. So not only am I hydrating and drinking water, I have an electrolyte blend, vitamin blend, and it's sugar-free. With one stick of hydrate mix into 16 ounces of water, and it can provide the same amount of hydration equal to drinking 2 to 3 bottles of water. Thank you. This way I can keep my resolution, keep feeling strong, have greater focus, feel refreshed, and maintain my hydration without having to drink as much. One of my favorite refreshing water enhancers they have is the lemonade flavor. It gives me energy. This one's also sugar-free. It's used with real lemons and it's pH balanced. And this also offers the same hydration as 2 to 3 bottles of water. Right now, 310 is celebrating a new year of goals with code CHALLENGED and giving our listeners 50% off up to $100 for your first order. With so many sample packs, new products, it's really fun and easy to put together an order or start a subscription on products that you know you'll use and will help you keep your resolution. So go to 310nutrition.com and use the code CHALLENGED right now for 50% up to $100 for your first order. That's 310-nutrition.com and use code CHALLENGED. It's all the good stuff your body needs in flavors you crave. So be healthier effortlessly.
And we're back.
The fact that it's even progressing in that way is in a good direction is great. But I want to shed light on the fact that people refer to you as being the Tiger Woods of figure skating or doing what Lewis Hamilton has done for Formula One. And this is something you've quoted in the YouTube Originals docuseries, The Outsiders, that you're in by Simon Frederick. What was it like to have that realization? And I know you've also said that it's still a realization that you're going through right now. And can you take us through that a little bit? Because it's really true.
Again, growing up in a sport of figure skating or any sport where you feel like you shouldn't be there, forces you, it gives you no choice but to find greatness. Because until you find greatness, technically, you'll never be seen as someone who's had success. So I think for me, you know, the realization of you know, someone telling me, and Simon was one of the first ones to say it. And I you know, it struck me because I didn't realize the impact it was having on people outside of skating. I started to see that people within the figure skating world, you know, Black, Indigenous, and people of color reaching out to me, you know, parents saying I've inspired their kid to be more themselves, or to pick up a pair of skates. But that's all within the space of figure skating. So for me to realize that I was having that type of impact outside of figure skating on a scale that's much bigger than just the world that I was living in, was extremely humbling and something that took me a second to, I had to sit with it and try to see how does that fit in my journey. You know, I didn't necessarily know that was going to be my path, because again, when I was a competitor, I wasn't an Olympic champion. You know, I didn't reach that kind of competitive, those kind of competitive results that would put me on a certain level. And so I, for the longest time, you know, always felt like I wasn't enough. And so to be told that I'm having that kind of impact, especially outside of skating, for the first time, I felt like maybe I am enough. And maybe what I'm doing is enough to inspire a whole generation of kids to be themselves and to be in a sport where they don't have to conform, and hopefully that sport will celebrate them because they deserve to be celebrated.
I was going to ask you about the Olympics and your dreams of becoming an Olympian, because I think that the idea, like the GOAT, you know, the greatest of all time, and, you know, Simone Biles, this past Olympic season, obviously shared in her vulnerability of just needing to step back. And what really got me was her willingness to share why. It was incredibly powerful. The trauma that she experienced, along with so many other gymnasts, part of the American team. But that she said, I finally felt like I got to make a decision as Simone. This wasn't like Simone Biles, the gymnast. This was just me, Simone. You were quoted in an interview saying that for years, my self-worth was tied to the dream of being an Olympian. The Olympics were the driving force behind everything I did. And at such a young age, I mean, I think that that's what is kind of, we're all having to kind of reckon with, is the amount of pressure that that athletes not only put on themselves, but we as a society put on young athletes to perform and be the greatest of all time. And that's the only option. And you know, you even mentioned Michael Jordan earlier, and it's funny. As a kid, I remember him like going to play baseball and then coming back to basketball because I also saw Space Jam. So that's what really, you know, put it into perspective for me. But as an adult, I never realized it was because he'd lost his father in a really traumatic way. His father was murdered in, you know, baseball was a connecting part of his relationship with his dad. And as an adult, I was like, oh my gosh, like what a human vulnerable experience. He just wanted to be closer to his father. It wasn't like to prove the point of being this best athlete at all athletics. And so the idea of humanizing the goats of the world and humanizing the experience of like going for the dream of being an Olympian. This is a very long-winded question, but the idea of, you know, as an adult, how do you look back at your experience of wanting to become an Olympian and, you know, reckoning your experience of just that's not where your path headed, and kind of talking to what you were just saying, that like, look where I am now. And there's so many beautiful gifts right in front of me because of my athleticism and who I am.
Yeah, this is a really important conversation, I think, in sports. I think mental health is overlooked in sports, especially high level competitive sports. You know, for me, and I think a lot of athletes, you know, when you start the sport, there is a moment where you see someone achieve the highest thing achievable in your sport, and you look at that, and because of the way that, you know, society works and the way that, you know, our brains sometimes work, is like, you, in order for you to feel like you are enough and to be validated, you feel like you need to achieve that. And that is, I think, in my opinion, it's sometimes it can lead to some emotional and deep mental health issues, because what happens, at least for me in my experience, that was what I identified with. Being this Olympic champion is what I believed I was, and my whole, like you said, my self-worth was wrapped around this idea of being Olympic champion. And you give everything you have in that, and you believe it so much that nothing, no one can say anything to you, or you feel like there's nothing that could come in the way of you achieving that. And so, in a way, for me, now looking back, I realize that in some way I was living in delusion, if you want to say, because yes, my dream was to be Olympic champion and I put everything in it, but I didn't realize that putting everything that I know about myself and the way that I feel about myself in that would most likely lead to disappointment. Because even when you achieve that, you think that this thing that you achieve was going to solve your problems. It's going to make you happier in your life. But a lot of athletes realize that even when they achieve this Olympic gold, one, it never feels like what they imagined it feeling. And two, once that's achieved, you know, there is a little momentary period where you feel really good and you feel proud of yourself. But then the question is, well, what's next? And that continuous search for the next thing to achieve, to me, is a path that never leads to deep fulfillment and deep happiness within your heart. And so when I realized that I maybe wasn't going to be Olympic champion and maybe that wasn't my path, I had no idea who I was, because Olympic champion was what I identified with, but Olympic champion is not what I'm going to be. So who am I? And I think a lot of athletes deal with that, because you spend every day of your life, every moment of your life, doing things, taking actions that are going to take you towards this goal. And so you train, you eat, you sleep, you don't have time for friends, for relationships, for all these things that you need as a human being. You put all of those aside for this one thing. And one, if you don't achieve it, then you've spent all this time doing something that doesn't allow you to get to know yourself and get to know who you are. And that was a really tough process for me. And I had to dive deep internally to start getting to know myself. And to me, I started to realize too that all of these reasons why I'm in skating, they're all external reasons. They're all material reasons, for the medal, for the results, for this, for that. There was, at that point, I felt like there was nothing that was inside of me that was motivating me to skate, that came from my heart. And you can get lost in that as an athlete, especially a high level athlete. You have all these goals and these dreams, and you sometimes can lose the reason why you're even doing this sport. And so I think it's so important for athletes, at least for me, from that point on till the rest of my career, I had to switch my perspective and my approach to competition and my approach to my career. I had to find an intention that was internal, that came from within. And without that, I don't think I would have been able to end my career and be completely at peace with it. And a lot of athletes don't get to start this internal journey until after their career is over. And that can be very scary because once you're done with it, you're not competing anymore. You don't know what to do. And then you don't know who you are. And that's why I think it's so important for athletes to get the support around them to help them deal with their mental health and guide them and find a way to help them figure out who they are as human beings and not just as athletes.
That's very beautifully said. Are you, do you feel comfortable sharing what your intention was or where that came from?
Yeah, of course. Of course. For me, my trip to Africa, I, at that point I went to Africa with my dad, because I was supposed to win nationals. I was kind of like the next one that was going to be national champion. At least that's what I thought in my mind. And that didn't happen. And so that's when my questioning started of like, well, if I'm not even national champion, what does that mean about me being Olympic champion? So that's where my journey started. And at that point, my grandfather was in a coma in Africa. And right before my competition, my dad said that my grandfather was out of the coma and he was, that my dad was going to go to Africa to go see his grandfather one last time, just in case he wakes up, he can speak to him and be with him. Or if he passes away, at least he's going to be there for that. And he wanted me to go with him and I couldn't because I had nationals coming up and then all these other things that I needed to do, worlds and all of that. But then nationals went terribly. And, you know, obviously now I see that it was meant to happen that way because the trip that I took to Africa with my dad to Guinea changed my life. And I spent 3 weeks there in the village with my dad and my entire family on his side, grandma, grandpa, uncles, aunts. There's about 50 of us of there in the village and we're all related. And it was a magical experience because for the first time, you know, I understood what internal fulfillment looks like, you know, being there and being in the village with my dad, where there's no electricity, there's no running water, you know, they have chicken, goats, cows, they eat off the land, they live with the land. I started to realize that these people there, my family, you know, they are fulfilled and they're content, but they don't have all the things that we have in our world, in our society, you know, all the technologies and opportunities, you know, they don't have that, but they have a sense of fulfillment in life that I hadn't seen in Canada or in the US. And so I started to try to understand where that came from. And I came to the realization that it came from them being connected to themselves, connected to nature and connected to each other. And that human connection that they had with each other was a deep source of fulfillment for them. And I realized at that moment that the part that I love the most about skating was connecting with people, making people feel something, making the audience experience what I'm trying to tell them. And when I made that realization from that point on, I decided that even when I was in competition, I wasn't going to see audience and judges. I was just going to see human beings in the building. And my intention from that point on was to connect with every single human being in that building. And that changed the way that I approached skating and it changed my career because after that I did start winning competitions because I was sitting in a different space. I was operating from a space that was much deeper than just the material things that I was motivated by before. And so it made my performances more deep. People felt it more and it became more real. And from that point on, that was the journey for me to continue to develop myself as an artist and as a performer. How can I continue to connect with people? How can I continue to share my story on the ice and make people feel things? And that was...
Well, I think you've done an incredible job because everyone is connecting to you, even within like a couple minute clip on a little tiny screen on their phone. You can feel your connectedness and your joy that you bring to your videos and your performances.
Hey guys, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back in just a minute.
Dear Ashley Challenge.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
And we're back.
I want to ask you some really fun, silly questions now because...
Let's do it.
Because that's like the fun thing is obviously like you started creating these videos and all of a sudden, you know, you're... a whole different group of people are seeing you. Like, I'm not someone that follows figure skating or skating in my general everyday life. I kind of just follow you on social media, to be honest. So like, who are the fun people that like have slid into your DMs that you were like, oh my gosh, they're watching my videos. That's crazy.
Jennifer Garner is one of them. Ryan Reynolds, Octavia Spencer, Taraji, Snoop Dogg,
yes!
Probably one of my biggest flexes
yes!
of all time is Snoop Dogg sharing my video. You know, growing up, it's like I was really into rap and hip hop and you know, Snoop Dogg, Tupac, Biggie, you know, all of those guys, I was listening to their music and I wish that I could skate to that, but I couldn't. And then I did little thing with one of Snoop Dogg's songs and he reposted it. And that was one of the coolest moments, I think.
That's the fun thing. Like there's a lot of ways we need to grow with social media as a society, but when it's like the fun stuff and the joy and when it is connecting like good people with good people and artists with artists, that's the stuff that makes it really fun. I want to talk about the Figure Skating Diversity and Inclusion Alliance that you co-founded. When did you co-found this program and what inspired you to do so?
Yeah. So FSDIA was co-founded in June of 2020. After the murder of George Floyd, you know, like a lot of us, you know, going through a lot of emotions, trying to go through it and deal with the loss, the death of another, you know, black man or woman to the hands of the police, was really difficult. And for a certain moment, you know, I felt like, you know, because at that point there'd been so many videos of black men and women being killed and, you know, nothing really happened. And so you learn how to internalize it and you know, and not really sit in it too long because it's really painful. And so, but then, you know, there was a conversation that was started within myself and a few other Black skaters about our experiences in the sport. And we started to realize that no matter where we were, whether we lived in France or US or Canada or Australia, we had all very similar experiences in the sport. And we started to realize that there's something that we need to do, because the sport of figure skating wasn't talking about it. No one was talking about systemic racism or racism within the sport. And so we decided to start an alliance of skaters around the world, of Black skaters around the world, to really create a space, one, that was for us to be able to share our experiences and connect with other Black skaters around the world and heal and have a safe space where we can talk about things that that happened to us and feel supported and feel heard, which was really important for us. So that's probably the main reason why we started FSDI. But then we started to realize that it's actually so much bigger than just us. And we need to hold national sport organizations like Skate Canada and US Figure Skating and the International Skating Union. We need to hold them accountable for doing the work and trying to change the things that don't allow Black, Indigenous, and people of color to excel in this sport and to compete at the highest level. And so we committed to bringing more accessibility to the sport. We committed to increasing representation. And that's also part of the reason why I started making videos, because I wanted other young Black girls and boys to see me skate and believe that they can do it as well. And with FSDIA, we have a group of incredible people, and this group of women decided that they were gonna start a mentorship program called Big Skater, Little Skater. And they put a lot of time in it. And essentially, it allows the next generation of Black, Indigenous, and skaters of color to connect with, the ones that have made it in the sport and that had success in the sport, and to be able to be there for them, whether it's emotionally, psychologically, if we can help them find resources, funding to help them with their skating. Essentially, what we want to do is we want to clear the path for these kids to get to where they want to go and reach success. And that, depending on whatever success means to them, we want to be part of that journey with them. So it's been a really beautiful journey, and I couldn't be more grateful to have these incredible people doing this type of work. Everyone is so committed, and we're making an impact on skating. We're helping change the culture of figure skating, and I think that's really important work.
I know that you were talking about funding, and I think that is something a lot of people don't understand, is how expensive the sport of figure skating is, especially when you're starting out in competitions and traveling. And so that's why it's so important for organizations like FSDIA to also provide these opportunities for young skaters who otherwise wouldn't have the ability to start figure skating if they had the dream to do so.
Yeah, it's as a sport, when you're starting out, it can easily cost around $10,000 to $15,000 a year, $20,000 a year. And, a lot of, myself included, don't have the financial resources to support that. My parents struggled to pay for my skating. And if it wasn't for, honestly, all of the coaches in my life essentially almost teaching me for free, or giving me lessons and telling me that I can pay them, 5 years later, if I need to, you know, but that they weren't worried about it. They just wanted to help out. If it wasn't for that, I probably wouldn't be here now. And but the thing is, not every athlete is lucky enough to have these kind of people and these coaches come into their lives. And so, you know, and then when you look at the highest level, when you're competing, you know, on the level of the Olympics, you're spending $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year to train, you know, like who
and
who
not
has
making
them?
My that
family
money.
Didn't
you're
have
not getting
that,
paid
you know?
To train.
And yeah. not, no, exactly. And so I, you know, as an athlete, you have to figure out how to make that work. But, you know, as a young family and when you have a kid that wants to skate, but you can't support that, it makes it really hard. And again, we know with systemic racism, you know, my dad, you know, one of the most intellectual, brilliant human beings on this planet, you know, wasn't able to find a job because he was an African immigrant, you know? So all these, you know, all of these things just make it really hard for families, for Black families, Indigenous families, and families that are, you know, immigrants. So we want to be able to help with that. And we want to be able to support them in those ways. And again, you know, we were able to raise some funds, and we've been able to help already a lot of skaters with their bills, their coaching bills, their skates. We're able to give them a free pair of blades and skates every once in a while. And just that alone is one pair of skates at that level is $1,500, you know? So it's expensive. And then you switch skates maybe once or twice a year. And then, you know, choreography is a couple thousand dollars as well. And then costumes are $1,000, and then travel, and then training, and then ice time is maybe $6,000 a year. So it's just like, you know, the more that we can help them on a financial level, and I know it's not only financial, but it's one of the reasons why we don't see skaters, Black skaters at the, you know, compete at the highest level.
I know that we already talked about some of the cool celebs that have slid into your DMs, but I also want to ask, is there anyone who you haven't done a backflip over that you really want to do a backflip over?
It's such a good question. I had that one too. It's such a good one.
Yeah. Okay. So the entire Marvel cast. Marvel
would they all be in one huddle, or would you do them individually?
You know what? I'd probably have to do them individually, but I would want to just pile them up.
In my head, they're lined out and spaced out perfectly, and you backflip over one, and yeah. then backflip over to the next, to the next, and it's just this relay.
That would be really cool. So the Marvel crew, I'm a huge fan of. Denzel Washington, yes. mm-hmm. one of my, you know, mm-hmm. Michael B. Jordan.
Yes.
That would be really cool.
I feel like some of these we can make happen. You've already made so much happen, you know, in your life. This is very doable.
I think it's possible. And slowly we're gonna get there. You know, we're just gonna get one more person, and then we're gonna get another one and another one, and we're gonna get there.
Do you believe in the idea of setting goals and manifesting them? Or are you, because yes, you are. A lot of successful people believe in that mentality. Did you have that growing up? Was that something that was instilled with you through your parents, or is that something that you developed over time?
Yeah, I had to develop it over time. You know, my parents you know, they immigrated here with no money and having to survive, learn to survive. And they've lived in survival mode for most of their lives because they have to provide for three kids and my mom not being able to work because she doesn't speak the language for many years. So they always lived in a space of survival. And it's really hard to think outside of that when you're living in that state. So for me, I had to learn with time, you know, what does it look like for me to set a goal and then to take actions in order to manifest it? Because I think for the longest time, I was like, well, that's my dream. And like, I want it to happen, but I didn't necessarily know what needed to happen in order for me to attain those goals. And with time, you know, I realized that it's not just believing, like, obviously you have to have this deep belief that you can do it, but you also have to take actions that are going to take you there. You have to physically put that energy in motion in order to get to the thing that you want to manifest. So, I had to learn that. And I think that process for me started, you know, around that time where I went to Africa and started to realize a lot of things. And I started operating from a different intention. And for me, that's when this idea started and I started to explore that.
Well, I believe in manifestation because I think we manifested being able to sit down with you today and it totally worked.
It totally worked.
Bilde, thank you so much for joining us. We are so grateful for the joy and creativity and art that you put out into the world. Where can our listeners follow you on social media if they don't already?
Yeah, on Instagram at Elaj Bilde, on TikTok at Elaj Bilde. And then I have a YouTube channel. There's not much in it yet, but there's things in the works. Exciting stuff that we're going to be working on. So I think it's Elaj Bilde on YouTube as well.
Thank you so much for joining us and inspiring us. Truly, we are so grateful that you took the time.
Yay!
It is so nice to meet your heroes and then have them turn out to be everything you wanted them to be and more.
And so much more. And what I love is just this theme of vulnerability and the people that we idolize in this world. I love this cultural shift of vulnerability. Like the fact that we could have a conversation with someone as talented and as gifted and as Elaj, who would be willing to share about what it felt like to have these Olympic dreams and, you know, and just stare them in the face and have to accept like where he was in life. And also look at all the opportunities that were just right there at his feet and his fingertips and realign his intentions. I mean, just, I feel so flipping back, flipping on the ice inspired after this conversation. Oh man.
And it's interesting because he, not only did he use the word journey, which you all know we love on this podcast, but he shared his journey. And the truth is, he is only at the beginning of it. And I am so excited to see what else he does for his sport and for anyone watching. He's going to inspire. He's already inspired so many, but there are so many yet to inspire. You guys, I know you loved this episode as much as we did. If you want to know more or continue to read up on all of this, make sure you check out his organization, Figure Skating Diversity and Inclusion Alliance. And just make sure you follow him on Instagram for all that he's doing and just a continued dose of complete inspiration. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Directionally Challenged and are so inspired just like we are. We have another great one coming for you next week. We will see you then.
Directionally Challenged is a production of Pineapple Productions.
Producer, Melissa DeMonts. Post-production sound by Chris Henry.
Music by Joe King.
And advertising partnership with Acast.